is Ryle Schallenberger from Northwest Mobile Juicing in Missoula, Montana, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 13. Hello, Ciderville. I am Aria Wincaller, your Cider MC, and I am feeling giddalicious with all the apple love that has been coming this way, both from you local yokels, aka subscribed listeners of Cider Chat, and the new villagers who each day keep moving into Ciderville and are grabbing a glass and joining this chat with you and I. Thank you so much. This week, we are headed to Montana, and we'll all be learning about mobile juicing with Ryle Schallenberger of Northwest Mobile Juicing. More on that chat in just a bit. You know, I've had some really kind words via listeners, both who have entered into the Cider Swag Contest and who just, well, were kind enough to leave a 5-star review and rating on Stitcher or iTunes. There is still time to enter the Cider Swag Contest. It ends on January 16th, so time is ticking away, and the official rules are found at ciderchat.com. Go to the page that says Cider Swag Contest. The swag is via Angry Orchard, and again, I really want to thank Angry Orchard for being the first folks who offered swag for this podcast, especially right at the beginning, because the podcast only launched, well, the last week of October. So that's kind of amazing. Time has gone by so quickly. And by entering, you have a really darn good chance of winning some Angry Orchard cider glasses. You know, they were specifically designed by the cider makers at Angry Orchard. And those folks, well, you know, they got the laboratory. I think they went up to Glass Mountain. They sat out in the orchard. They spoke to the Angry Orchard trees who got really happy. They poured cider on the ground. If I was there, we would have been running around circles doing hookah, hookah, hookah. I'm not sure what that means, but it would have been gotten crazy. Man, I would love to design some cider glassware. I wonder what that would look like. Would it look like a little apple? I do kind of like that style, like a little brandy sniffer. That's typically what I drink my cider in because it gives me that base that allows me to swirl it and get my nose in there, and I get to cup it in a certain way, sometimes warming it if it's too cold. But I digress. These Angry Orchard glassware that I have myself, I also have an Angry Orchard glass, is a lot of fun. And I actually like the handle of it, the way you hold it. It's really cool stuff. So you could get that. You could also get some cool, kitschy keychains and an Angry Orchard paddle opener. I knew where you were going with that paddle reference. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Well, you know, I can't really go forward until I take a little bit of time to really know just how much the village folks of Ciderville have just been blowing me out of the water. And I have to read two reviews. This first one just came in while I was gearing up to chat today with each and every one of you. This one comes in from Vim. And I believe Vim is, well, his full name, I'm not going to say it right now, but sounds Dutch to me. Wim, ik spreek u Nederlands. Ik spreek een beetje. I do know how to order cider in Dutch, and it would be, ik wil graag een beetje cider. Alsjeblieft. Pretty cool, huh? That took me a long time to learn. Oh, boy. Okay, so Wim wrote, and this was on Stitcher, the show really delivers the nuts and bolts of how it is done, as well as a great high-level view of the industry trends. I've learned so much and truly enjoy listening to shows several times to get the last bit of juice from this apple. Oh, man, you're a good writer. I really appreciate that, Vim. And I think I'm going to take you up on trying some of your cider when I head up your way. So I'll be in touch with you on that. Thank you so much and really sweet of you. The second review and rating I want to read to really, it really also knocked my socks off. And it began with, phenomenal show packed with info and entertainment. I recently started learning about cider and went looking for podcasts that I could listen to. Thankfully, I found this one. Her interviews are chock full of info and are easy enough for a new person to understand. Once I listened to the first episode, I was hooked and listened to the next 11 back to back. I even plan on listening to them again just so I could take notes this time. The fact that she interviews such a range of cider makers is awesome to me. I eagerly await for each episode, which brings me to the only problem with the show. She only puts one out a week. Who knew 7 days could be so long to wait? Well, you know, that's so sweet. I would love to have more podcast offering, and I'm just trying to keep up with what I can right now. So thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. I love that idea of having more than just one week. That's cool. And one of the things I also want to say is that, you know, we're all beginners, and probably a little fact about me that you don't know is that I'm a martial artist, and I actually am an Aikido sensei. So that means that I teach a Japanese martial art called Aikido. And one of the things I always do as a teacher is to always stay in the beginner's mind. And I think this is true for cider making too. It's an art form, just like a martial art, in that anytime that you think you know it, the apple will always come in the back and, like, you know, bop you in the butt and say, no, pay attention here. The true master is one who stays in the beginner's mind and is able to make that accessible. So I really appreciate all the cider makers that I talk to on Cider Chat, and for folks being willing to keep it simple, keep it clear, because in the end, that is what moves it forward for all of us, and to really watch out for being too uppity or creating any kind of attitude. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. Well, we are going to now move into this chat, and I'm going to bring you right in where I was talking straight away with Ryle. And again, he was up in Montana, so you could hear me talking about that area of the country if you've never had the pleasure of going there. It is spectacular. And he has what is called a mobile juicing trailer. And there are photos of his mobile juicer on ciderchat.com. So if you want to see them, you have to go to ciderchat.com. Go there, look at the photos of the mobile press. He's just started doing this. It's taken off in the Northwest, and it's a really cool thing. I'm super excited to bring to all of you Ryle Schallenberger of Northwest Mobile Juicing. Let's all grab a glass and join this chat. Big Sky Country in Montana. That's awesome. Is there a lot of places to press out there? Are there a lot of orchards or fruit growers?
You know, there's a region north of Missoula called Flathead Lake that's a pretty healthy cherry growing region. And then here, just south of Missoula, the Bitterroot Valley has had a long apple history. They came out here and they started putting in orchards about 1880, 1890. And at one time, there was more apples in the Bitterroot than, you know, Washington or Oregon. And then as the industry kind of moved west, those regions, you know, kept and, you know, expanded, and it's a much better place to commercially grow apples. But so there's not a huge commercial growing now, but there's a fair amount of fruit locally, and that's actually kind of how I got into it. There's, as cider's, you know, expanding and kind of blowing up right now, there's a handful of startups just around here in Missoula that initially they were looking for equipment, and we were looking at starting a co-op to purchase some equipment to fund all everybody's different plans for juicing. And then we kind of came across this mobile juice trailer, and I decided just to make it a business in itself. So there's Montana Cider Works is in Darby, Montana, Sula, Montana. It's about an hour south of Missoula. And she's kind of the first commercial grower or first commercial cider maker in Montana. And so it's kind of a venture in between her, myself, and a couple other growers that we're looking at that are growing cider apples here in the valley. And we're also looking for juice equipment. Mm-hmm. So it's But I mean, as far as location, I grew up here. I got my family. We live here. I've got a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and 1-year-old. We're kind of put down our roots here, and I didn't want to, we don't want to move. And so we can also, you can probably hear in the back. I'm talking here at my house today. Yeah. They just came in from, we just got dumped on with about 6 inches of snow.
Wow.
So they were out playing in the snow.
That's great. Good for you. Hey, can I ask the woman that you mentioned, could you say her name again?
Her name is Lee McAlpine from Montana Ciderworks.
Okay, great. So I'd like to just begin, you know, I get that you're from Montana, and it sounds like you're really community-oriented, and I noticed also that the website, at least to me, it seems like it just got like a new makeover. It looks awesome. Could you just tell me, like, how did you find this mobile pressing? Because it's just blowing my mind when I heard about it from Dave White, you know, Whitewood Cider. I'm just like, dang, that is the way to go. And it's just going to blow things up for cider makers. So could you give us a little bit of a history on that?
Sure. So they've been kind of, this business model came from Germany. There's a handful of equipment makers here in the States, but the juice processing and cider industry has such a longer history in Europe that in Germany they kind of developed this platform about 15 years ago where they started making these mobile juice trailers commercially. And about 5 years ago, a guy from Germany had moved to Canada and kind of brought the idea with him and started producing them up there. So they run them. There's a handful of units that are running in Okanagan, and they kind of just keep expanding. I believe I'm the first one here in the States to have one, but they're getting to be more and more commercially available for people. So the guy actually went on Canada's equivalent of Shark Tank, the new business venture show, and pitched his idea and got funding to make these. So I just bought one of his trailers and brought it down here. It's a little bit tricky getting it imported to the States, but kind of worked through those issues and brought it down last February, or in February this year is when we brought it down.
What was tricky about bringing it through?
And maybe not tricky, but learning experience, maybe I should say. It's being manufactured in Canada and all the equipment from Europe, just getting it classified correctly and meeting all the Department of Transportation requirements, make sure, you know, the States is fine with everything that's a legal, you know, vehicle to come in here. So it wasn't, I shouldn't say tricky, more just a learning experience for me. Previous job, my day job, I'm a mechanical engineer, and we have dealt with customs and international business in that fashion, but it was my first time firsthand bringing something across the border. So it just, we brought it down in February and put the website up in April, and so this was our first season operating.
It hasn't even been 1 year that you've been in business then.
Yeah, in April is when we launched the website and started ramping up for cherries. So yeah, this was our first season. But yeah, in April of next year will be a 1 year, I guess, anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Did you do a crowdfunding for this, or was this, again, just a group of investors going in on this unit?
No, it's just a personal business venture. So I got my own, you know, did my own business plan and got my own financing. So it's initially we were looking at it as a co-op, put in a grant sourced by, I'm part of a co-op called Budwood, where it's geared towards kind of revitalizing the fruit growing region or industry here in the Bitterroot and in Montana. It's just a co-op that's aimed to help startups as far as in the orcharding arena, you know, people looking for advice on, variety selection as far as cider apples or equipment for maintaining their orchards, rootstocks. We were looking at things like this, branching out and having, you know, equipment rentals for people where we would share, you know, say share this mobile press with everybody that would need it. We unfortunately that grant didn't get funded, but I really liked the idea. I liked the business, and so I just decided to fund it on my own. And it's still working out really well. It's still accomplishing what we were looking for it to do, which is, you know, to help, you know, cider startups, specifically, you know, people that are wanting to get in and do a local product. They want to utilize the apples that are grown locally, or maybe they have their own orchard, or they have connections for apples, but they don't have the juice and equipment to do it. And, you know, the capital to invest in something like this doesn't, on a small scale, just doesn't make sense. So it's really lets people, you know, use some quality equipment at a low cash cost to them. So it's the same idea, premise as the mobile bottlers, the mobile filtration guys, any of those services that for the small people, it doesn't make sense to own that equipment. But to, you know, utilize it as a service-based business, it works out great for them.
I could really see that. Again, when I heard about it, I thought, bingo, what a fantastic idea. And the way the trailer is set up with the sidewalls come out and set up a cover for the entire workspace, so it's all contained. Before I have a couple questions, but I was wondering if you could share who the contact is up in Canada that you got this mobile unit from.
One gentleman is Remo Trevato, but he does, his website is juicing.systems, and he's an equipment rep for Kreuzmeyer, which they're out of Austria.
And now, was this unit brand new, the unit that you bought, or was it used?
So my unit, this individual, so Remo, he bought he got his trailer and he ran it for two seasons. And he was so busy that he was looking at purchasing a new trailer with double the capacity. So he was just shopping around to see if anybody was interested in it. So I bought his trailer from him. And then he bought a new trailer, or expanded, and got a bigger size trailer.
I wonder, Ryle, are you now going towards another trailer too, knowing how incredible that this service is, or the demand for it?
Yeah, we're looking at a couple different options to do, you know, to upsize certain components, like upsize the press to be able to do larger quantities per day, expanding, you know, adding more trailers, say a trailer dedicated to Washington, a trailer dedicated to Oregon, a trailer dedicated to Montana, Idaho. Also looking at setting up just a fixed location here in Montana where we could ship in apples when it makes sense. Sometimes it always, as far as shipping, you're always cheaper to ship juice than apples just because you're shipping less weight. One of our biggest advantages is that we can travel a lot cheaper than shipping in most instances. But as far as, like, right now, I just mentioned we got 6 inches of snow. It's weather really limits our outside capability. So I've been looking at setting up a fixed facility where we could then continue to run through the winter and service a lot of the local people that, you know, to Montana.
Right.
But we don't, you know, we advertise service in the whole Northwest, and it's not, I mean, from here to Portland, it's, you know, 8-10 hours. And so we do a fair amount of driving, but we also try and schedule as best we can. So we'll go and be, you know, 2 weeks in one location, or so it's not the travel and the mobile is a lot of driving, but we can usually do pretty well scheduling to accommodate the different locations.
Well, how about if we go through the actual process for folks who just have no idea how this has been set up before? And it's kind of like the three P's that you provide: the pressing, the pasteurization, and the packing. So could you talk about that process? Mm-hmm. so that, you know, for the cider maker who just has a small orchard?
Yeah, I'll just start from the beginning. So our trailer, it's a 20-foot trailer that we pull behind just a normal pickup. I mean, we got a 1-ton diesel that we haul it around with, and we have a 35 kW 3-phase generator that we put in the back of that truck, and that powers the whole trailer. So as far as coming on site, we generally say we need, you know, 30 feet by 30 feet as far as a space to set up in. And we bring our own power, so all we need is just a certified potable water source. So in most instances, like we set up at a cider house, they have their own water and wastewater disposal. So we just set up adjacent to their building and pull water out of their facility and then drain the rinse water that rinses the apples back into their facility. And it takes about a half an hour for us to set everything up, to open up the three sides of the trailer, open up and hinge up to open, to expose everything. And about a half an hour, we get everything up and running. And then we'll process roughly 3 bins of fruit an hour, and typical yields anywhere from 150 to 200 gallons an hour. Our belt press is rated at 75% efficiency, which means that if you bring in 12 pounds of apples, it'll output 1 gallon of juice, so about 9 pounds to the gallon. And those yields go up or down just based on how good the apples are. If it's a really fresh, juicy apple, or you know, a lot of the cider fruit, they'll sweat for a long time and they'll dehydrate, so you'll get lower yields. But it so yields kind of depend on the fruit. But in our process, the fruit goes into a conveyor. You know, we load it into the machine and into a hopper. It goes into the conveyor and gets elevated in this conveyor, and it gets hit with a high pressure water rinse, 3 separate stages where it cleans the fruit, and it's a built-in pressure washer that just washes the fruit as it goes up the conveyor. From the conveyor, it drops into a grinder. We've got several different screens to our grinder, so we can kind of match the consistency of the mash to what's going to output the best yield from the different apples that we'd be pressing. And that falls into another kind of hopper holding unit that we then pump that pumice to our belt press. And a continuous belt press is kind of the modern version. You know, it's the old, you know, rack and cloth type presses that you see, or the old basket type presses. But it's a continuous process, so it continually lays down a very thin cake of this pumice, and then feeds through the machine on 3 different stages of rollers and a belt. So it's a continuous process, so it continually moves, and all the juice gets pressed into the bottom collection tank, and all the dry pumice goes out the front to a collection bin that could be used then for compost or pig feed, or always seems like there's plenty of takers for that type of stuff. And then the juice exit out the bottom of the press. And so, like for the cider maker, we would then pump directly into fermentation tanks or the IBC totes or whatever container they're wanting in, or directly into their cider house. The back end of the trailer is set up for fresh juice, so sweet cider. There's a flash pasteurization unit that's a high-temperature, short-time pasteurizer. And then we fill bag-in-box-style packaging, so similar to maybe boxed wine or similar, you know, packaging where it's a cardboard box with a plastic bag liner. And those bags are hot-filled, so it's an in-bag pasteurization. And the bags are comprised of 3 different layers. The inside layer is rated for that hot temperature, that hot filled temperature, and it's BPA free. The middle layer is a oxygen barrier, so it won't it will keep oxygen out and won't spoil the juice. And then the outer layer is a nylon layer that it just adds toughness to the bag, won't let it get punctured or or something like that. And then the close the dispenser is actually a wine style tap. So when you dispense the juice, it only lets the juice out and won't let oxygen in. So the packaging is set up to be shelf stable. So it's 1 year without refrigeration, just shelf sitting on the shelf. And then once you open it, because of that tap, it can actually sit out on your shelf for 2 months while you drink it. This style packaging, they sell roughly 2 million worth of bags to the market in Europe. And it's kind of just starting to catch on in the States as far as bag and box. You see it more and more.
I wanted to kind of back up a little bit to some of the things that you were talking about there in terms of the water. What's the amount of like water usage that you would do on a given day?
It's about a gallon a minute. And that's what we do is just once through rinsing of the apples. So the water comes in, it rinses, and then it drains out. So we don't do any chlorination. We don't have to do any treatment of that water. It's just fresh potable water that rinses those apples. It's about a gallon a minute.
And Ryle, is this a two-person operation, or could one person pretty much man the entire unit to do the pressing for a day?
Yeah, it's set up for one person. So typically, you know, it's just myself that's running it. I also run it with my father, so he'll take it out when I can't go. But when we come on site, it's typically what we require is, you know, having at least two people there to help move around apples, to bring bins to the trailer, take mash away, and you know, the more people, the lighter the job. But typically, to operate the trailer, it's one person, and then you know, a couple helping hands to move stuff around throughout the day.
And I expect that some of the cider houses that don't necessarily want to do the packaging, you pump that directly into some of their containers, and those could be taken away and kind of moved in throughout the course of the day. Is that true?
Yeah, we more often than not, we're just filling the IBC totes, the big kind of wire cage around a plastic container. They're typically 275 gallon IBC tote is the most common that we fill into. And you can move those around easy with a pallet jack or a forklift or, you know, forks on a set of tractors. And so that's typically what we're filling into. And then they're taking that into their, you know, what makes the most sense in most instances is when we're pressing directly at the orchard. So we'll go directly to the source of apples. And then the cider maker will haul that juice to their operation. So it's and that's where it makes the most sense. Is you know they have an outlet for the pumice. They've got plenty of space. You don't have to transport the apples. They come straight out of storage. And so more often than not, we're set up locations like that.
Is it really dependent upon, you must have to have a level surface to park your trailer. So if you're going out into an orchard, and you said you need like a 30 foot square, I'm not sure, space, then you're in the orchard, you're able to do it right there. How much dependent on level ground are you? Pretty dependent upon it, I imagine, right?
Yeah, we've got jacks on the trailer to where we can kind of level it. As far as grade, maybe a 8% slope would be about as much as we'd park on. But it becomes more of an issue for, you know, handling the bins and moving apples around more so than the trailer. But yeah, I mean, a level surface on concrete or pavement is the best. We've been out in the, you know, in gravel or actually out on the in the orchard on the dirt before, and it's fine for the processing. We, you know, we keep clean. It's just more of a nicety to be on pavement or something like that.
I was wondering, have you had some pretty crazy setup situations that you could talk about, or one that was just like, I don't know how we're going to get that in there?
Yeah, we about sunk the trailer through a guy's dry well one time. We were pulling around his barn, and he was like, oh, don't drive there. There's a dry well. So that was about the, it could have been a catastrophe, but for the most part, it hasn't been too bad.
This chat is packed full of info. Ryle Schallenberger of Northwest Mobile Juicing is simply inspiring. We'll be talking directly about the equipment and the cost of setting up a mobile juicing business. Before we get there, I want to take this pause to ask you for a bit of Cider Chat support. A few folks have been mentioning that they are now going to get a copy of the new Cider Maker Handbook by Claude Jacquelet. I certainly have a copy and I love it. If this is on your to-do list, please consider using the link for the new Cider Maker Handbook via the resource page on ciderchat.com. By using that link, it'll take you directly to Amazon where you can order this intricate book on cider making techniques. And every order via that link provides a small kickback to this podcast. Thank you for supporting Cider Chat. Now let's get back to this chat. And how about the equipment itself for you? I mean, you have an amazing background as a mechanical engineer. So the upkeep of the equipment, is it pretty solid equipment that you're dealing with? Or do you find yourself with a wrench in your pocket and wearing overalls?
No, it's the equipment itself has been great. It's 2 years old, so it's basically brand new. We really haven't had anything break down, and I carry around with me, a set of critical spares. If we were to have something break down, we can fix it pretty readily. But we've been really lucky on that front. We had the diesel generator that we haul around is a 1982 Nissan. It's a beast, and it's been really good. It quit us one day, so we were doing some mechanicking on it. But other than that, it's been pretty rock solid. But we've been, I think, fortunate on the equipment because, I mean, anything like this is kind of finicky when you're dealing with everything is automated. So the instrumentation and control side is what would be more finicky for us. The physical motors and belts are pretty robust, but you can fry a sensor pretty easy or have some electrical component short out. And so that's what we mainly keep for spares to keep everything running. So, for instance, the conveyor is built into where you can't overfill our mash tun, or you can't overfeed the press. Everything is automated. So when you fill up the juice tank, a sensor automatically kicks on to pump that juice overboard. So if we've had any problems, it's just with if a sensor, goes out or something. But we've been pretty fortunate, and the equipment is really well built, and I've been really happy with it. It's a shame in most instances, there is good equipment here in the States, but the German equipment has done really well.
Is there other mobile equipment? Because this is the first I've heard of it in the States.
So the equipment itself is, not necessarily mobile. I mean, it's equipment that you would put into a fixed location. So there are, there are applications that are, like you could put a good nature press onto a trailer and do the same thing. The mobile aspect is just designing the trailer and integrating the system into a mobile unit. So you could put, a good nature press or a Frontier belt press on a trailer and do the same thing. You just would have to engineer it and integrate the system to function mobily.
Well, it's all about the good design, as you well know. I was wondering, how much did you know about cider? I mean, this isn't just for cider. You press grapes and cherries and imagine any fruit that folks want to have pressed, but how much were you involved in actual cider, or do you drink cider?
Yeah, I'm a huge cider fan. I think that's how I got into this was, I was talking about the history of the Bitterroot Valley with the apples that they grow around here. I grew up, my folks have about a 5-acre stand of old Macintosh trees that are probably about 80 years old, 90 years old. And they're just the huge old standard trees. And, you know, every year they lose a couple just because they're getting so old. But my parents ran cows, and the cows would eat all the apple drops every year. You know, we'd make some pies, we would press some fresh juice. But, you know, most of the time those apples were just going to cow feed, and we really wouldn't do anything with them. And so I really started looking at what can we do with these apples that just go to waste every year. And for my engineering job, I would travel quite a bit to Europe, to Spain and to Italy and Germany, and spend a little bit of time in Amsterdam. And that was my first introduction to cider. I was sitting at a table in Gijón, Asturias, and everybody's drinking these just green, unmarked, unlabeled bottles. And I was like, what is all this? And that was my first taste of Spanish cider, and just fell in love with it. And then drinking the true English cider, other places, it just something that I had never experienced and fell in love with. And so when I came home, started looking at, you know, options for, you know, getting that in the States. And at that time, you just very limited on getting true English cider, or, even still Spanish cider is pretty hard to find. And so looking at, you know, going down the road that everybody goes on, we'll make cider out of these Macintosh apples, which makes a fine product, just not an English style cider, something with more wine quality to it. And so I just kept investigating that. I actually have an order. I've planted about 100 trees here at my place in Missoula of true English cider apples. And I'm planting also a larger orchard next year, about 2,000 trees. So I got into this from the grower side, just trying to, wanting to get some apples growing that could help, expand this and make my own. And I've made my own hard cider for the last 3 years, and with varying levels of success. This year's batches were definitely much better with the broader selection of apples that was around this year. I would try and different jobs, dealing with like the Newtown Pippins or Jonathan's, or pressing some Macs for different people, or just any of the better quality apples. I would snag a carboy here and a carboy there and make my own. So it's been, as a home brewer and a home cider maker, I've learned a lot, especially now getting the experience to work with, some awesome, awesome folks like Dave White at Whitewood. It's been a great experience, and that's kind of what led me to be excited about this industry, is, just dealing with those people, and it's a great community to be part of.
Definitely, definitely. Do you do a lot of the travel out to Washington State? I mean, you're in a number of states, but is that where you're finding most of the cideries that you're working with are located right now?
We've been pretty well diversified. I mean, we've been down in Oregon and Washington and Idaho and Montana. Majority of the apples we've pressed have been out of Washington, but the maybe 50%, 25% in Idaho, 25% in Montana. Some down in Oregon. So it's been a pretty big mix. The market that we really are targeting, we're not looking to, our service is not a competition or a replacement for like a Fruit Smart or a Ryan's Juice, which are the big commercial dessert juice providers that they can ship out, juice per the tanker. Our niche is really pressing those unique apples that, that we find that are on a small scale or a small batch, and facilitating, not having to say ship apples from one location to get them pressed and then ship them back to the cider house. or in the instance where somebody's looking to expand, they're a small cidery and they're looking to expand their production, but they don't want to, you know, invest in that equipment. So we can come in and actually supplement what they already have. You know, maybe they already have a press, but they need to get more throughput. We've functioned in that capacity this year where, you know, where they have a lot of apples and they just can't get through them. And some, you know, in past years they would go to waste, and where we can just come in and kind of supplement their production. So right. I was going to say, and we just kind of bridge the gap for most people. You know, they don't, a lot of people are getting into cider, you know, especially wineries or, you know, breweries, and they kind of want to test the waters before they go and invest in doing it on a larger scale. So we'll kind of bridge the gap for those people that want to try it out on a, you know, on a commercial scale, but don't want to really get all the way in yet.
Well, so. It's a great investment for a cidery to have you come in, because they now they don't have to house the equipment that for some places, especially for a small orchard, they can't house those apples all year long. And so they do the pressing, and then the equipment would just sit there for a year. So the whole economy of scale, and also environmentally, it's just this time is just spot on for you. So bravo, Ryle. Really, a really amazing service that you're offering. You know, one other thought I had was, what are some of the regulations that you deal with to be moving a mobile unit? And of course, you know, the whole food safety issue. Is there, and you're moving from like state to state, a lot of hoops to jump through, or just pretty standard, or anything that surprised you in this process that you said, oh man, I didn't think about that?
Well, the way initially we were going to operate under, you know, obtain our own license for, say, packaging, fresh juice is the real licensure, is what I would need to obtain. And they're open to the, dealing with the FDA, they're open to my process. They like the function that we do, and they like our process. They think it's great, but it's difficult to obtain my own license because they want you to have your own point, you know, your own point of source for your water and wastewater, and then things like restrooms and that type of thing. So the way we operate now is more of a lease agreement where it's, you know, whoever we go and package for, they have their own juice license, say. So they have the license, and it's just a rental agreement with my equipment. So no different than leasing a backhoe or, you know, go renting a truck. It functions the same way. So all the regulations fall under my customer, and we still, you know, can get inspected and do any of the rigmarole that we need to do. But it ends up being, since it's their facility, their juice, and it's just a service, it's the licensure is on them. Same with the cideria. When we come into their location, you know, we're operating underneath their water and wastewater permits. And so it's, especially for hard cider, it's just a, since we're making an agreement or an ingredient essentially to, hard cider, it's with it being fermented, there's very little regulation on the act of pressing, you know, to make juice for an alcoholic product. So the biggest surprise for me was just not being able to gain really our own license, which I'm still working on. I believe that here in the next year, I'm basically present a new plan where we will essentially be, you know, bring our own restrooms, our own water, and it's going to be a little bit more trucking for us and more setup, but we'll basically be a true mobile facility with all the requirements. Basically, all the laws are written for a fixed brick and mortar type facility. And then there's all the laws for like the taco truck or, you know, the mobile food type regulations. And we essentially have to meet both of those regulations. So it's melding our operation to fulfill both those sets of rules.
Well, it's just like the cider.
And that's mainly for the
it's just
the
like,
package portion.
Right. It's just like the Cider Act, you know, helped American cider makers catch up, or the law catch up with American cider makers. And it sounds like what you're proposing, changing it from that brick and mortar to the mobile, is really helping the economy move forward, but also the laws to ebb and flow too, with new entrepreneurs like yourself offering an amazing service.
Exactly. It's really just getting everybody on board with the new idea. You know, there's mobile beef processing, there's mobile poultry processing. It's just getting everybody's head wrapped around that you can make a safe product mobily, and really having them realize what the benefits are. In, for instance, here in Montana, there's no juice processors. You know, there's not the support network for like applesauce or peelers or anything that like Washington has. And so for a local orchard around here, if they have coal type apples that, you know, don't make the dessert fruit grade, they really have no options for those. I mean, they go to waste, you know. And so even juicing apples, you know, they're getting them from a packing house. They'll fluctuate anywhere from 2 cents to 8 cents a pound on a given year, sometimes less, sometimes more. And for those folks that, you know, say they get hailed out one year, they get a hailstorm and it just takes out their whole crop, and they're still fine, great apples. They've just got these hail marks on them that disqualify them from selling in the supermarket, or even, you know, a lot of times farmers markets, people will stray away. But we can take that product that's not worthless, but not worth a whole lot, transform it into a juice that now gets them back up to where they can be profitable for that year. And really, it adds a lot of value to the small-time producers. And so I think that with the changes in regulation, you know, it's going to take support like that, and for legislatures to see what value we do provide to the local communities.
Absolutely.
And
I imagine that there's a lot of folks out in Ciderville right now who are listening, and just bubbles going off in their head going, oh my gosh, you know, why don't we have this in our region? I wonder, you know, I mean, you know, it seems like you really have it in your region, but there's nothing like this in the Northeast that I know of. Of course, we have mobile canning, and down in the Virginia, North Carolina area, I haven't heard of anything like that. Not that somebody can't put it together. So I think when this podcast goes live, your phone might be a little bit ringing off the hook there. But you sound like the
person. Sure, and it's something that, you know, we've thought about. You know, is how do we expand? What do we do? And you know, we've talked about franchising it and setting other people up, or just expanding the company and say putting, you know, expanding to the bigger regions of New York and Michigan and the Northeast, and kind of going that route. So yeah, I'd be open to anybody that calls. We can talk about any ideas that come up. So.
Well, that sounds great. We're going to, on the show notes to this episode, we'll have some of the photos that you sent along and links to get a hold of you. And I was just, you know, kind of wondering in general, in terms of this process, if you were to look back, you know, before you started it, is there anything that you would have said to Ryle like a year or so ago as a piece of advice for today?
I would have got a bigger press. I'd say, Ryle, get a bigger press. it's been a huge learning experience. This is my first business venture on my own. It's been a great experience. And it's definitely expanded my resume or my personal capabilities, I would say. But yeah, as far as the equipment itself, I would say get a bigger press so that you can do more per day.
Mm-hmm. But. And then I probably should ask this, because I imagine listeners would want to know, and it's up to you if you want to answer, but what does a press like that go for?
The Roughly about 50,000 in my whole setup. I'm probably right around 150,000 for the whole setup.
And when you're scaling this for, go ahead.
I was going to say we've been specifically talking about, you know, apples, but there's also, I've got equipment on there for doing all the stone fruit. So cherries, plums, peaches, and we can also process any of the berries. And we did a lot of cherries this season. And so that's another set. We kind of set up for, you know, the summer type fruits, and then we'll set up for, you know, apples and pears. And, so it's kind of move stuff around on the trailer to expand.
Well, I saw that, you know, I saw that you have that like deep pitting or something like that, and that you're willing to set up in the orchard, the packing house. It's on the website, a fruit stand, farmer's market, cider house, and distillery. And so that's a lot of different markets, and including also doing what I would consider like community service, like for hobby orchardists. And that's an amazing service that you provide too. So your equipment is used in a lot of different aspects here. So the baseline for the cider maker, and then there's attachments. Is that what I'm understanding that you have on this equipment?
Yeah, we, I guess it's different venues. The equipment is the same wherever we go. We'll set up, you know, for instance, we'll set up the destoner instead of our grind when we're doing cherries versus our grinder when we're doing apples. So there's a little bit to reconfigure, you know, job to job or fruit to fruit. But as far as venues, it's all, you know, we did a community pressing this year where, you know, we just say kind of, send out the flyers and say, hey, we're going to be here this day. And if you've got fruit that you want juiced, you can just show up, and we'll even do, you know, people would come with 2 bushels or 10 bushels or, you know, their backyard trees that they get way too many apples and they, you know, they want to do something with them. Or, you know, we organized a pressing for a local homebrew shop where the homebrew club was wanting to do, you know, big batches of cider. So we set up, and then the club, you know, divvied out all the juice to let them go and experiment on their own. As far as community events, yeah, like local high schools, as far as doing a fundraiser where they, you know, they go out and they go out to the community and they get all these apples that are going to waste, and then we juice them, and then they can sell that juice as a fundraiser for, you know, football jerseys or whatever events that they're going to go do. So we try to do a lot of that, working for, you know, like a local food bank where we, they get the apples donated, and then we would, juice those, as part of their food distribution. So we, you know, our main market is, you know, the alcohol markets, but we really like, working in, you know, in that capacity where we're helping out the local communities and they're truly getting local juice. That's our branding on our packaging is just simply local juice. And so, you know, we can set up in, I guess commercially, you know, like in a supermarket, and people can see exactly where their juice is coming from, and they see the apples come in and the juice comes out. And even for a, you know, local hard cider aspect, people can really appreciate and they really enjoy seeing the trailer in action and knowing that, okay, it was this apple from Benson Farms down the road that went into my juice or my cider. And, you know, aside from the hard cider craze, you know, the local food movement is huge and people have loved that aspect of it.
Yeah, I love that aspect of it. And that's why I've been so excited to speak with you. I could just think because the 2015 crop in my area was just insane. And a lot of trees were just hanging with apples. And certainly the deer population will probably be a lot higher next year because of it. But yeah. it would have been nice, you know, to have something like that available.
Sure. Maybe here in the future it will. So
fingers crossed.
I'm sure any good idea catches on. So
that's right. Well, Ryle, we're going to have everything on the show notes here in terms of getting a hold of you and a little overview of what you said. And I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. Of course, I know the snow's on the ground, so you're not really out pressing today. But I want to wish you the best of luck, and I hope to catch up with you again and check in as Northwest Mobile Juicing starts to transform into, I'm sure, bigger and even better things than you're doing now.
I was going to say, and I've enjoyed listening to your other podcasts. They're really... certainly informative and entertaining just to hear from everybody you've talked to. So it's certainly a good thing you're doing as well.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Oh boy, that was a good bit of info from Ryle. Contact for Ryle Schallenberger of Northwest Mobile Juicing and photos of this trade, the act of mobile juicing, can be found on the show notes for episode 13 at CiderChat.com. And I wanted to share with you that I just got the news just a couple days ago that we, Ciderville, are going to CiderCon. And CiderCon is a cider conference, and it's taking place in Portland, Oregon. It's put on by the U.S. Association of Cider Makers. And with the Cider Act having just passed into the U.S., I suspect this is going to be a really joyful event. Certainly, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I can't expect it to be boring. My gosh, it's cider. I'm super psyched, and I'm going to be heading out on the 1st of February and taking you along on this trip. That's right. So expect lots of tweets. You can follow me at Cider Chat, and I expect some periscoping. If you don't know what periscoping is, it's an app. You'll have to download it, and it's live streaming in real time. I have a Periscope account, and it is called Cider Chat. So you could follow along with me, and it would typically go out on a tweet that says, I'm periscoping and come on live now. And typically the periscope will stay live for only 24 hours, I believe. So I've already lined up chats with UK cider makers, and I'm expecting to be speaking and chatting with so many of the US cider makers and trade folks in attendance. If you're attending CiderCon, let's chat. Send me an email, Rhea, that's R-I-A, at ciderchat.com, and let's connect to set up a chat. You know, I actually have a green room at CiderCon, so we're going to be kind of in a quiet spot. We'll have some really good quality recording, and it's really super easy peasy. I'm so looking forward to it. When I think about some of the places that I've recorded, like at Cider Days, I was in the basement of the Berkshire East, where all the rental equipment was, and folks were so kind to like hang out with me, but it got really, you know, crazy. So the fact that we have a green room at the Hilton Conference Center is super duper exciting. I will also be rolling out my media kit. Yeah. Which will help me sustain this podcast and help it grow. Now, what's a media kit? It provides the nuts and bolts of sponsoring and supporting Cider Chat podcasts. If you want to support this chat, direct message me on Twitter or send me an email, Rhea@ciderchat.com. Oh, packed full of info, but not overwhelming, is it? I mean, whenever you feel overwhelmed, just grab that glass, open up that bottle, and just, you know, sit back and savor the cider. It will show you the correct path. Oh boy, thank you so much for hanging out with me in Ciderville. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you soon in Ciderville.